How does communication faster than the speed of light work? How about interstellar space travel without our primitive liquid-fuel rockets? How have you come to grips in your development with environmental problems, energy problems? How did the different races actually arise? How many species are there out there? What was there before the Big Bang? What is God? How can we extremely extend our life? Are there also criminals in your world? How do you deal with them? Do you use transportation to move about? How does it work? And your social system? Capitalism, communism, socialism, democracy, dictatorship, monarchy? What policies meet the requirements of all classes? Is there something like a galactic club? How does one become a member? What rules have to be complied with? What kind of clothing do you wear? How is it made? What kind of metal or other alloys do you have? Where are they used? Are there wars in the universe? Why? Who against whom? Our curiosity is unending. At some point, we will be faced with the choice of being galactically involved or subsisting as an underdeveloped planet, cut off from the rest of the Milky Way, possibly to self-destruction and a new start. Just think, the presence of the ETs, visible to all citizens of Earth, robs many global players of their power. Religions, cardinals, popes, mullahs, chief rabbis, and so on, belong just as much to the losers as national governments. Politicians must come to grips with the questions of losing their power from one day to the next if they have to hand over their power to a world organization. The elites will lose their prerogatives, writes Claudio Stella. Why? Won't people simply adapt? If only. And irrespective of the leading political and financial groups, there are myriads of religious communities on Earth. The so-called prophets, the self-styled apostles of Jesus, the elect, the saints, and not to mention the hypocrites will never admit that they have, for decades, led their believers in a merry dance. The layperson has no idea how many churches there are in total, and that each one of them claims to be the only true one. The following incomplete list of existing religious communities should give us food for thought. Church of Constantinople, Ecumenical Patriarchate of Constantinople, Orthodox Autocephalous Church of Albania, Archdiocese of Albania, Orthodox Autocephalous Church of Alexandria and All Africa, Patriarchate of Alexandria, Church of America, Archdiocese of America, Church of Bulgaria, Patriarchate von Bulgaria, Bulgarian Orthodox Church, Autocephalous Church of All Georgia, Patriarchate of Georgia, Georgian Apostolic Orthodox Church, Autocephalous Orthodox Church of All Greece, Archdiocese of Greece, Greek Orthodox Church, Autocephalous Orthodox Church of Jerusalem and All Palestine, Patriarchate of Jerusalem, Autocephalous Orthodox Church of All Poland, Archdiocese of Poland, Polish Orthodox Church, Autocephalous Orthodox Church of Antioch and All the East, Patriarchate von Antioch, Rum Orthodox Church, Church of Romania, Patriarchate of Romania, Romanian Orthodox Church, Church of Moscow and All Russia, Patriarchate of Moscow and All Russia, Russian Orthodox Church, Church of Cyprus, Archdiocese of Cyprus, Cypriot Orthodox Church, Macedonian Orthodox Church, Orthodox Church of Bessarabia, Montenegrin Orthodox Church, Ukrainian Autocephalous Orthodox Church, Turkish Orthodox Patriarchate, French Orthodox Church, Abkhazian Orthodox Church, Croatian Orthodox Church, Moldovan Orthodox Church, Belarusian Orthodox Church, Pomorian Old Orthodox Church, Orthodox Old Rite Church, Russian Orthodox Old Rite Church, Russian Old Orthodox Church, Coptic Orthodox Church, Egypt, British Orthodox Church. This church, founded by Raymond Ferret in 1866, calls upon the tradition of the Celtic Church existing until the Synod of Cashel in 1172. Roman Catholic Church, also Catholic Church, Philippine Independent Church or Aglipayan Church, after its founder, Gregorio Aglipay, independent of the Roman Catholic Church since 1902. Holy Cross Old Catholic Diocese of Minnesota, Bishop James Judd. Old Catholic Diocese of Napa until 2010, Old Catholic Church in California, Bishop Robert Fuentes. Old Catholic Diocese of New England, Bishop Rosemary Ananis. Old Catholic Diocese of Washington, D.C., Bishop Robert Fuentes. American Old Catholic Church in Colorado, Bishop Dan Ginzig. Apostolic Catholic Church in Florida, Bishop Chuck Lay. Ecumenical Catholic Church in New York, Bishop Peter Brennan. Old Catholic Church in Louisiana, Bishop Alan Jimenez. Other independent Old Catholic Churches that belong to the World Council of Churches through the International Council of Community Churches, ICCC, are American Catholic Church in California, Bishop Lou Bordiso. Apostolic Catholic Church in Washington, Bishop David Strong. Ecumenical Catholic Church in Connecticut, Bishop Lorraine Bouffard. Open Episcopal Church in Great Britain, Bishop Jonathan Blake. Biserica Cattolica Independenta in Romania. The Society of St. Pius X and other traditionalist or sedevacantist groups. Swiss Reformed Church, Evangelical Church of Egypt, Synod of the Nile. Evangelical Presbyterian Church, Ghana. Assyrian Evangelical Church, Presbyterian Church in Ireland, Presbyterian Church in Cameroon, Presbyterian Church of Nigeria, Church of Scotland, Free Church of Scotland, United Free Church of Scotland, Cumberland Presbyterian Church, Presbyterian Church, the largest Presbyterian church in the USA, Working Group of Mennonite Brethren Communities, Federation of Anabaptist Communities, Mennonite Free Church of Austria, Union of Evangelical Free Church Congregations, Union of Baptist Congregations in Austria, Union of Swiss Baptist Congregations, American Baptist Churches, USA, Southern Baptist Convention, Congregation for Christ, Moravian Church, African Methodist Episcopal Church, Church of the Nazarene, Evangelical Church of Czech Brethren, United Church of Christ, Christian Church, Disciples of Christ, Seventh-day Adventist Church, Assemblies of God, Federation of Pentecostal Churches, Church of God, Ecclesia Congregation of Christians, Mulheim Association of Free Churches and Evangelical Communities, Oldest German Pentecostal Association, Word of Faith, Swiss Pentecostal Mission, International Christian Fellowship, Jesus Freaks, Schwenkfelder Church, six congregations in Pennsylvania, Shakers, are deemed to be the smallest existing Christian confession, Universalists, Apostolic Church of Queensland, Apostolic Church of South Africa, Apostle Unity, Federation of Reformed Apostolic Communities, Apostle Ministry of Jesus Christ, Wiesbaden Apostolic Community, Federation of Apostolic Communities, Het Apostolisch Knutschap, Christian Science, Church of God, Seventh Day, Unification Church, Jehovah's Witnesses, Adamites, Arianism, Fifth Monarchy Men, Gallicanism, Bohemian Brethren, Hussites, Huguenots, Congregationalists, Brethren of the Free Spirit, Petaria, Paulicianism, Puritans, Ranters, Socinianism, Zionites, Mormons, Scientologists, the Church of the Rosicrucians. That was just a little more than 100 Christian churches. Then there is the world community of Muslims with its respective subdivisions, Shiites, Sunnis, Wahhabites, Salafists, and so on, and each religious community is firmly convinced that it possesses the one true religion, the single immutable truth, very often directly inspired by God, or at least a Holy Spirit. For these people, it is simply incomprehensible that their faith is suddenly no longer correct. Millions of high priests, sect leaders, the blessed, the illuminated, or otherwise inspired people would never be able to cope with the new facts. All of them will admonish their followers not to listen to the extraterrestrials under any circumstances, curse them, and fight them in the name of God. For how much longer will the ETs watch earthly egoism before they act? When will they have had enough? When will their patience be exhausted? The limits of their empathy be reached? Have they set a deadline for their scientific contact persons on Earth, For so long we will leave you in peace, but there will come a time when enough is enough. And then? Will they simply disappear without a trace for the next few thousand years, or will there be the complete divine shock for humanity? Which values are more important for the ETs? In the past, and I know quite a lot about this, the extraterrestrials never revealed themselves to huge crowds of people. They always showed themselves to biblical figures, such as Moses and his brother Aaron, the patriarch Abraham, wise Solomon, or the prophet Ezekiel, in small groups, at least according to what Holy Scripture says. They did indeed subsequently take Enoch, later misunderstood as a prophet, into their spaceship and instructed him in language and science. But they did not cause a shock to any crowds. On the other hand, they struck mercilessly, rampaged terribly if an experiment went wrong. Cities such as Sodom and Gomorrah were destroyed with the same brutality as ultimately the whole of humanity through a deliberately caused flood. Deliberate? The flood was not a natural event? Stories of the flood are a universal fact in religions and myths, be it the Bible, the Sumerian Gilgamesh epic, the Epic of Creation, the Enuma Elish of the Babylonians, the Book of Mormon, the Kogi in Colombia, the Hopi in Arizona, the Maya in Central America, or the Dogon in Africa. A god always warns human beings of the flood. All of them knew of the coming deluge far in advance, and not just only 2 weeks in advance, like today's weather forecast. The moment in time was set long before. The countdown has started. Without exception, all adherents were instructed to build a specific watertight ship. Logically, none of the gods acted omnipotently. None gave human beings a boat as a gift. None of the heavenly beings who had come down to earth possessed the omnipotence to produce a ship just like that in the blink of an eye or by snapping their fingers. Every ship that was built required technology. Shipbuilding is technology. And each of the pseudo-gods described the coming flood as a punishment. The human spawn of the time was meant to be destroyed. Clearly, a genetic program had gone wrong. That, at least, is what many traditions say. According to the Book of Enoch, chapter 106, verse 13, a great destruction will come over the whole earth, a deluge. Great punishment will come over the earth, and the earth will be cleaned of all dirt. That is why I will bring a deluge to the earth. What decisions will the ETs take today? In the past, they left us unmistakable signs, enticed us to follow the trail. These signs do exist. Those who want to have recognized them. Created thousands of years ago, they are nevertheless addressed to a technologically and scientifically oriented society of the future, which had to stumble across them. Millions of enlightened Earth inhabitants have meanwhile understood this, and as planned, the message from the past has promptly added up. But science, whose real task should actually be to further knowledge, indignantly turns its back. Nothing to do with me. It does not want to acknowledge that it was deliberately led astray. And afterward, it is difficult to admit to having been used as a useful idiot. In psychology, it is called repression, and the media, always concerned for its alleged integrity, is not allowed to report objectively about something that millions of people are concerned with. We have created a two-class society. A small group of people in the know is opposed by a majority of those who don't know and who do not want to know in their lovely, idyllic world. But for how much longer? Does every intelligent species out there actually have to engage in space travel? Do they have to do it because it is dictated by their insatiable curiosity? Because they need raw materials? Because their home planet, their home sun, is exploding, burning up? Because their galaxy is being swallowed up by a black hole or is colliding with another galaxy? That is also relevant for us. According to NASA calculations, the so-called Smith's Cloud, will collide with our Milky Way in 30 million years. There will be gigantic fireworks of destroyed celestial bodies, and 2 million new stars will be created. The Smith's Cloud consists primarily of hydrogen gas, currently still about 8,000 light-years distant from the Earth. But it is approaching us at a speed of 240 kilometers per second. If our astronomers are able to calculate what will happen in 30 million years, then extraterrestrial astrophysicists can do the same. They, too, will know how long before they crash and will seek out new habitats before then. Space travel is a must for every society. Others think differently. In a lengthier article in the specialist journal IBIS, astronomer William Hosick argues that ETs wouldn't engage in space travel. How so? Hosick argues that the raw materials on every planet will run out at some point. But people are made such that they do not plan for the long term, meaning for centuries and longer. Be it the states or private companies, neither invests with centuries in mind because they need short-term results for their shareholders or voters. If humans were to send a spaceship on the search for raw materials, the people left at home would have no idea whether the crew of the spaceship had been successful or would return empty-handed. And no human society would spend perhaps $1 billion on such an uncertain venture. People live for the short term and want to see quick results. Furthermore, the construction of a gigantic generational spaceship would not only swallow up vast amounts of money, but also raw materials, precisely those materials that are becoming scarce on the home planet. Logically, such valuable raw materials could not be squandered on an immensely expensive space adventure, the results of which, if any, would not become apparent for centuries. The same earthly logic also applies, William Hosick says, to extrasolar civilizations. The results of his analysis are correspondingly sobering. 1. In order to obtain help from another civilization, we would have to know the others and at least be in radio contact with them. 2. The civilization on that distant planet would have to be more technically advanced than us. 3. That civilization would have to be in a position to receive and understand our messages. 4. It would have to make available the raw materials we seek. 5. It would have to be willing to share its technology and raw materials with us. 6. We would have to be capable of understanding its tools and instructions. 7. The ETs out there would also know that their raw materials would be exhausted at some point, hence they would be unlikely to give raw materials to other civilizations. That all might make sense from an economic perspective. It is nevertheless incorrect. After all, no gigantic spaceship is needed to seek and mine raw materials in space. We never have to go to far distant locations. We have masses of raw materials in the asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. Distant suns, too, are orbited by more than one planet, and meteorites fly through all of space. Neither are generational spaceships required to discover the geological composition of distant planets. Thanks to spectral analysis, we can already do that with our super telescopes. Furthermore, innumerable probes can be sent out that radio back their findings to the home planet. Then, earthly lifespans should never be transposed to alien civilizations. The space-traveling ETs will know ways to extend life. Finally, space travel at interstellar distances will not be undertaken with our outdated liquid-propellant rockets in any case. Quite different possibilities will exist in the future, and thus different times. Dr. Hosick's views are based on false assumptions. The ETs have left traces in the past, lots of them. They are described in ancient sacred writings as well as in the landscape. The completely straight lines that have been inscribed across the earth for thousands of years were not created by our Stone Age forebears because they had nothing better to do. But they followed orders from the ETs only to establish their sacred sites in specific locations. The stone circles of Stonehenge, do not happen to indicate the distances between the planets of our solar system. Their astronomical teachers were those gods. Similarly, the columns of menhirs in Brittany, France, which always reveal the same distances, or precisely half thereof, and which are full of Pythagorean triangles, are not inspired by any whim of nature. Our Stone Age blokes received their geometrical orders directly from the ETs, long before Pythagoras. And today? We human beings should be prepared for a peaceful arrival of the extraterrestrials. Where are the signs, other than Fatima, the UFOs, films, books, and TV series? They lie in the open landscape. Yet our blind intellectual world, including the rational media, has long since managed to ridicule these signs, to discredit everything. Crop circles? Every Tom, Dick, and Harry knows about the fakes. After all, the thoroughly earthly artists are revealed in magazines and on television. Clearly recognizable, they demonstrate their skill in creating magnificent pictures in the landscape. What else is there to be said about it? Why waste time and money to confirm simple fakes? The whole weird business started in Australia, in the area surrounding Tully in Queensland. In the autumn of 1966, farmer George Pedley discovered six circles in a cornfield. They were classed as the product of small tornadoes. Others described them as a UFO nest. Then the phenomenon began to spread like a virus to other countries, Canada, Italy, Mexico, the United States, and of course the country where there has always been weird events, England. Reasonable and unreasonable theories were advanced. They were the tracks of tornadoes, of rutting pigs or other animals. Ants or termites were responsible for the circles, and in general they were damaged from hail. Next on the list were unknown force fields active below the surface of the earth. I read somewhere that certain animals would run in circles when in heat, and I also read about the assumption that the riddle could be explained quite reasonably through mushrooms. Then it was the turn of hot air balloons, which had gone down in impossible locations. And, of course, we must not forget the footpads of UFOs. The next theory took recourse to solar wind as a solution, or lightning strikes with an electrical discharge to subterranean watercourses. Moles or a collection of worms were made responsible, and high-frequency signals were supposedly at fault for the symbols in the fields. The physicist Dr. Terence Meaden, University of Oxford and Dalhousie University, Halifax, Canada, connected these impossible events with atmospheric physics, plasma vortices, and electromagnetic fields. None of this was sufficient for profound thinkers, because every explanation had convincing counterarguments. Did the world-famous psychologist C.G. Jung not write about strange lights and celestial phenomena that would appear as the messengers of great collective changes in thinking? Even about psychic forces and events which would be incomprehensible to people. Could it therefore be that these symbols might have their origin in the imagination of individuals or the imagination fed by collective dreams and visions? Or did the community of human beings not generate a collective cultural impulse which released sufficient energy to cause a wave of unusual events? Over the years, all explanations, be they ever so reasonable and factual, faded away because the drawings on the ground simply refused to cooperate. If originally the pictures appeared in grain fields, they now suddenly grew in fields of barley, rapeseed, and even maize. If in the beginning they were simple circles, increasing numbers of ellipses, and wonderful, partially interlaced works of art began to be created. The pictures are their own proof. None of this fit any longer with ants, termites, mushrooms, worms, tornadoes, rutting beasts, lightning strikes, or plasma vortices. The pictures displayed intelligence, so fakers had to come to the rescue. Some wise guys were making fools of all of us and having a good laugh about the human ability to make things up. The first to out themselves were the British pensioners, Doug and Dave. In front of the camera, they stated that they had faked all the crop circles to make the subject ridiculous. Their revelations soon turned out to be a huge bluff. Several mighty shapes appeared in various places where the busy pensioners could never have been. That included the picture of August 8, 2008, in Milk Hill, Wiltshire. It consisted of 44 circles of various sizes, interlaced at the center with various additional representations, or the geometrical shape of the hypercube, created on July 17, 2010, in Fosbury Camp, Wiltshire. Here, there is not a single circle, but only symmetrical lines forming a massive hexagon with a cube in the center. When the busy pensioners Doug and Dave could not be held liable, other fakers had to do. At some point, I can no longer remember when, a young man announced on a German television program that he and his group had faked all the symbols. Cockily, he drew attention to one detail that people had to be aware of. All the circles, lines, and so on, always bordered on a tractor track or beaten path. A pure lie. Hundreds of circles and lines are not connected at any point with a track, however insignificant it might be. A picture like the so-called magnetic field formation, not far from the Avebury Stone Circle, is so complex that not even a company of soldiers could have faked it overnight. On March 4, 2015, a complex formation appeared in a maize field near Isara, Santa Marta, Brazil. On January 4th of the same year, a group of interlinking circles appeared near Guadalajara, Mexico, also in a maize field. On May 8, 2015, there were formations in the Fangshan district near Beijing, China. From June to September of the same year, there were further extraordinary formations in various locations in Italy. Even Germany, skeptical about crop circles, marveled on July 16, 2015, about a shape in a grain field. It was near Fürstenfeldbruck in Bavaria. And hard as it is to believe, a picture near Fürstenfeldbruck was even printed in the major German magazines Focus and Spiegel, without a mocking commentary. Meanwhile, the riddle of the crop circles has spread to about 50 countries. Sophisticated teams of fakers must be at work worldwide. The logical conclusion? Or are we being deliberately misled, as with the UFOs? The editors of the 150-part History Channel TV series Ancient Aliens wanted to find out. They sent their clever commentator Giorgio Tsoukalos to England. He was to commission two well-known fakers to make a copy of an already existing crop circle. So Russell and John, as the two were called, stuck their poles into the ground, laid out trails, fixed ropes, and seized their stalk stompers. That is what the small boards are called, which are used to flatten the grain. The boards have a rope attached to both ends. This rope is put over the shoulder, and then the board is pressed down on the grain and lifted again by the rope for the next step. In fact, Russell and John managed to produce quite a reasonable copy of the original within 210 minutes. Drones flew over both pictures. Only a few differences could be discerned from the air. But what did a closer inspection reveal? In the meantime, a team from the University of Michigan had started to investigate the phenomenon scientifically. The physicist Dr. Eltjo Hasselhoff demonstrated the differences between real and fake in front of the camera. The typical signs of a real crop circle are the following. The blossoms are not damaged or broken, in contrast to the fake made with the stalk stomper. The same applies to the way the stalks are bent. With the stomping method, they are broken, or at least lacerated. Not so with the mysterious shapes that did not involve any human activity. Curiously, all so-called apical nodes display an extension of 172% in comparison to the compressed stalks in fake circles. The second and third node on the stalk has veritably burst from the inside. This points to a short discharge of energy that must have occurred in the stock. Dr. Hasselhoff demonstrated it in front of the camera. Various stalks were taken from the crop circle and put under the microscope. The stalks in the middle showed longer burst nodes than those on the periphery of the circle. The differences are like between a horse and an elephant, the physicist explained. The burst nodes are longest in the center and grow smaller toward the outside. The stalks can be shown to have burst because of electromagnetic energy. It is the trigger of the phenomenon. Giorgio Tsoukalos, the commentator of the TV program, said, "I find it strange and discouraging that a phenomenon like the crop circles is not being investigated in depth by science. The circles are dismissed from the beginning as fakes, although there is undeniable evidence that they are genuine." He is right. As long ago as 1990, a Center for Crop Circle Studies was set up in England, where else, to investigate the riddle in a squeaky, clean, scientific way. In the foreword to the book, The Crop Circle Enigma, the archaeologist Michael Green wrote, "Meanwhile, the phenomena are revealed to us in astonishing diversity, in mighty proportions, and in downright awe-inspiring beauty. Various strange circumstances accompany the appearance of the circles. They include, above all, high-frequency signals which appear to be subject to specific laws." And Professor Archie Roy, honorary member of the School of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Glasgow and a number of other recognized astronomical institutes, speaks of an immense riddle facing physics. The old gentleman knows his history of science. He says, "The whole history of scientific discovery consists of the outsider being declared to be mad by the so-called specialist world, in order finally to triumph after all the contempt and be elected a genius." The TV program Ancient Aliens also showed irrefutable film clips that are quite shocking. The observer sees white circles or spheres floating in the air above a field, including over a track, and a tractor driving along. Within seconds, an amazing picture is created under the shining spheres. As if on command, the stalks lie flat and form into a wonderful and complex work of art. The British Center for Crop Circle Studies has meanwhile published such films and lets the evidence speak for itself. Thus, 145 of such circles were created within 16 minutes near the Stone Age complex of Stonehenge. And recently, perfect microscopic balls made of a melted material have been discovered in these curious formations. The first were found by accident at Martinson Farm in Midol, Saskatchewan, Canada, after the earth had been sifted there. Meanwhile, they have also been captured in sieves at other locations. Ralph Noyes, an ex-civil servant in the British Air Ministry, who later became an Undersecretary of State, noted a development in the riddle of these pictures. "It is no longer correct to refer to crop circles. The depictions are growing in size, diversity, and complexity. If in the 1970s and 1980s they were still circles with a diameter of 10 to 20 meters, today's formations extend for hundreds of meters and often consist of more than 100 individual parts, which combine into an awesomely beautiful pictogram. Fakers, and be they ever so sophisticated, can no longer keep up. Neither could a company of soldiers of the British Army. Sites at which pictures appeared in previous years are kept under observation with automatic cameras. Groups of volunteers support the nightly checks. The wise guys are out of the picture, even if there is still the occasional stray one. On the other hand, researchers with a scientific background are growing increasingly baffled and are searching for a common factor." John Mitchell says, "The impression is growing that there is a scientific reference to something. But what? What is the intention of the circle builders?" The master of science and former astronomer at the Royal Greenwich Observatory, George Wingfield, asserts that we are dealing with some kind of non-human intelligence. "The messages speak of an extension of human consciousness." The archaeologist Michael Green said, "I am convinced that the source is intelligent in nature and that they are gradually revealing their ideas in accordance with a plan. Meanwhile, Terry Wilson from England has published a remarkable story about crop circles. The phenomenon is documented worldwide with precise dates and locations, and it is also shown that strange formations were already documented in the 16th and 17th centuries. Who is this intelligence supposed to be? Does this unknown power have no other possibility than to make itself noticed through pictures in the fields? Why not direct communication through our media? Why no awesomely beautiful pictures in the night sky, or interference on our television screens that gradually reveals itself as a pictogram? Counter question: why don't UFOs show themselves over a sold-out football stadium, even though that would be technically possible? I assume all these things would be possible, but the others want it like this right now. People are intended to marvel and talk, write and marvel. Slowly, we are to be made aware of the other dimension, without ambush, without violence, and without dictatorship, yet visible for everyone. Whereby other researchers, including myself, have noticed that many of the grandiose formations are emerging out of the ground near Stone Age complexes, such as Stonehenge, Avebury Ring, Silbury Hill, or the White Horse at Uffington, all of them in England. I heard that the same is true of pictograms in Australia and Mexico. And in the United States, the pictures are created near Indian burial mounds. How is the past connected with this? Our early history is more mysterious than how we learned it in school. There we were told that our ancestors, only just descended from the apes, had vegetated in caves, groomed the lice out of their fur, occasionally hunted a mammoth or other animal, and in general chewed on berries and roots. May well be. But another group of Stone Age families behaved in a highly intellectual way. Their astronomical and geometrical achievements prove it. Furthermore, our diligent archaeologists are moving the Stone Age architectural marvels even further into the past. Current dating is no longer correct. Around 18,400 years ago, the Mediterranean sea level lay 35 meters lower than it is today. This is shown by a cave system with painted walls that lies 35 meters below the water. It is situated at Cap Morgeux, east of Marseille, France. Ruins have meanwhile been found underwater in all the world's oceans. The sea level has risen worldwide. If we thought that the first building phase of the stone circle of Stonehenge occurred in 2800 BC, the complex is meanwhile at least 2,000 years older. The Great Pyramid in Egypt is the first planned high-rise building in antiquity. It used to be said, built in 2500 BC. Yet the circular complex of Göbekli Tepe in Turkey is 8,000 years older. The approximately 400 rock paintings in the Chauvet Cave, near Vallon-Pont-d'Arc, France, were dated to about 20,000 BC after their discovery. The latest C14 analyses produce a definitive age of 37,000 years. And even in Germany, which, due to its recent history, wants to avoid anything to do with nationalism, ever more prehistoric riddles are appearing that are all somehow connected with the starry sky. About 7,000 years ago, there existed in what is today Lower Bavaria several circular complexes with a diameter of between 50 and 180 meters. Without exception, they have an astronomical orientation, and frequently several of these stone or wood circles are lined up like pearls on a string. The same applies to Lower Austria, Poland, and Hungary. The circular palisade of Goseck in Saxony-Anhalt, Germany, has a circumference of 75 meters, and like all the others, it is a so-called sun temple, that is, astronomical, and its age is at least 5,000 BC. Near Kunzing in Bavaria, the Stone Age blokes jammed 2,000 oak tree trunks into the ground. The same applies to innumerable dolmens and menhirs. Astronomy played a central role in the heads of the Stone Agers. And we modern people only have super clever answers as to the why. They were light pointer instruments, playing fields, and secret locations for male rituals, up to and including the most naive of all answers, they had been calendars. The Stone Age complexes show the intelligence of their planners. These clever architects will also have noticed in nature when the first insects appeared, when the buds opened, or when the fruits ripened in the autumn. A small scratch on their cave wall was sufficient to register when the sun rose increasingly earlier or later. A wooden stick in the ground was sufficient to determine when the shadows were longest and shortest. Determining the equinox did not need a gigantic calendar complex. Dragging monoliths weighing several tons about and grinding them down to build a calendar was as necessary as a hole in the head. Furthermore, the command from the high priest, "Spring has come, the seeds need to be sown," would have been no use whatsoever if winter in the relevant year lasted longer than normal and there was another snowfall in the middle of April. It is time to think of something smarter than different versions of a calendar. Our ancestors followed their celestial cult for one reason alone: because of the gods. It was the gods who had descended from the heavens. Their lights moved in the night sky, and their disciples had instructed human beings in various fields of knowledge. Our Stone Age artists were meant to build astronomically aligned buildings. Their descendants, us, should take notice, become puzzled, and seek causes. That is precisely what is happening now. We have no alternative, because the creature in our heads causing us disquiet has a name: curiosity. No intelligence in the universe can do anything about curiosity, otherwise it would not be intelligence. So who are these beings racing about in UFOs who have caused magnificent artworks to be created in the landscape, and who could clearly destroy us at any time, and did so in the past, but today observe the madness on planet Earth pretty dispassionately? Who are these types who manipulated us thousands of years ago, and who, even today, give us a demonstration of technologies which can, for example, quite simply disable intercontinental missiles with nuclear warheads? That happened on March 24, 1967, at the site of the Oscar Flight Launch Control Facility in Montana. None of the launch-ready missiles could be prepared for launch any longer. And this happened although each silo was located more than a kilometer from the next, and each one had an independent power supply. Who is playing with us? Why do we have to put up with it? Are ETs really on Earth? Why could they do with us what they want, but are clearly refraining from doing so?